Hello and welcome to the Heal Your Heart, Heal Your Life podcast, the podcast where we talk all things trauma, healing, and how we've grown into the people we are today. I'm very honored today to introduce Jamie Lee Willoughby. They're a queer Somatic sex educator and ceremonialist. I've had the honor of witnessing their journey across the last couple years and just seeing them move through the gender binary and moving into gender fluidity, and how amazing that has been to see them flourish and thrive in that and just be the most fantastic expression of themselves. So I'm very excited to have you here today. And I think we're going to learn and grow so much from just having you on. So thank you so much, Jamie Lee. I'd love to throw to you. Welcome. Please tell us a bit about your story.
Thank you so much for having me. And yeah, it feels like actually a huge turning point for me to be on a podcast specifically talking about my queer identity and my journey with gender, because it really rapidly unraveled only within the last, since the beginning of the year with gender stuff. But really in the last 3 to 5 years with my like queer identity, it's something that was consistently nagging at me that I had an awareness of since I was 14.
Wow.
Noticing my attraction to women, to girls, people of the same sex as me. And yeah, it's been very fascinating navigating the external narrative that has been pushed onto me, the heterosexual narrative, and being and playing that role of the girl, of the teenage girl, of the woman, wanting to impress boys, impress men, and you know, having real genuine experiences with that, having beautiful boyfriends and all that, but simultaneously having this like deep nagging feeling inside of me that, oh no, there's another part of my identity, there's another part of my expression that yearned to be set free. And so yeah, this whole journey for me has just been like really looking at every single part of my psyche that says I am this, and being like, oh, is that a story that someone has put in my brain, or is that coming from the feeling? And it's so confronting having to realize how many I am blah 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 is actually just external narratives that were kind of what feels like brainwashed into me.
Because
the more that I discover who I actually am, I'm like, whoa, I'm so not that version of myself that I was told to be.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Like I imagine like a bit of a thread where it's like you have this nagging feeling and you have the choice to pull on the thread and see where the thread goes, and then you unravel like this whole larger piece of your identity that you never even knew existed. And like I don't have a great understanding of gender fluidity, I will openly admit that, but I guess just hearing you speak about it, like it's a concept that we've been put on us from childhood, and it kind of like relates to my people pleasing experience, that you're a woman, you're expected to, you know, please and be quiet and like not stand up for your rights and just kind of take whatever is presented to you. And that was a whole part of my identity that I had to unweave and unlearn in order to be my best version of myself. So it's really interesting that you've expressed it in that way as well. I feel like there's a connect there between those two things and societal expectations and views of people.
Yeah, and it's interesting, like I was born in 1996, so we're talking about the late 90s and the perspectives of that time, and you know how everything was to do with my gender, what clothing and toys people wore for me as a child, what shows I would watch. I even before I was born, when my mum was pregnant, my dad didn't want there to be another child, and he said, well, you know, just make it a boy, you know, if it's a boy it's cool, right? And so there was already that expectation on like, oh, it's another girl. I'm one of three female bodied children. So it's like, oh, another girl. So already that feeling of, oh, if I have a female child, she will be like this. So it's yeah, interesting looking back on, you know, all the moments as a child where it was so instilled in me to be a girl. But it's interesting because there are many trans people and non-binary people who feel like, oh, I was like this trapped version of myself as a child, or, you know, trans men being like, I was actually always a boy even though I was being raised as a girl. But I don't have that experience. Like, I don't feel like I was always, yeah, like more masculine, whatever. Like I loved embracing the color pink, you know, that was authentic for me at that time. But I think a part of maturing is actually me realizing that I am everything and everything is me. And so if I'm perceived through the lens of girl or woman or lady, I actually feel sorry for the person who's perceiving me through that lens, because they're going to miss out on who I actually am, because I'm so much more than any gender binary label that can be put on me. And I see everyone that way, you know, like, of course, like, you know, people that are like, yes, I'm a woman, that's who I am. I'm like, yeah, fuck yeah. That's amazing that that resonates with you. But I can also see that every single person has the capacity to be anything that they want to be, and that as many human beings as there are in the world, that's how many gender identities that we are, that there are. So, you know, if I'm in a space with five other people who all identify as being a woman, I'm not thinking, oh, every single woman here has exactly the same gender identity, because the diversity in the term woman is massive. And the fact that every single person is like a cosmic soul, you know, cosmic souls don't have gender. So, yeah, I feel like it's really allowed me to be like, all right, gender is not the main essence of what makes up a person.
Yeah, there's just so many more facets than just that one that we've decided to, I guess, pin a lot of our identities on.
Yeah.
I'm really curious when you said you feel sorry for people perceiving you in such a way, in such a limited view. I'm sure there's people listening right now going, hang on a minute, what? Why do they feel sorry for me? Can you explain that in more depth?
Yeah. Yeah. So, for me, I think that the understanding of like the gender binary feels really like two-dimensional. Whereas for me, people also talk about like masculinity and femininity, and I also don't see that as like two separate parts. I see it as a multi-dimensional sphere of energy that is all one, and where femininity is, there's also masculinity, and it has a different name, and it's everything. So it is just this like expanded awareness of what is.
Yeah.
And so, you know, when people see me and they see breasts and hips, and they go, oh, woman, then especially in male-bodied people, I notice how this societal implanted script just starts playing out. Like, if when I'm around a male-bodied person who is trying to like impress me or thinks I'm attractive or something, I'll notice them like dropping in like, oh yeah, I'm strong in this way, or I'm really smart in this way, or yeah, something, mentioning their penis, like, oh, just playing out this role of all the ways that they think I want to perceive them because they perceive me as a woman, right? And then I'm just like observing that and being like, you know what? Like, you're actually not getting to know who I am, because you've already started this script based on what you think I want to hear because I have tits.
So it's like
we're actually not able to really meet each other because you've already made all these assumptions about who I am based on what body I exist in.
Yeah, definitely. It's like there's masculine and feminine traits, and anyone can portray any trait at any time. And I guess that's where that piece comes in about, you're looking at me in a certain way, or you're reflecting in your own way of how you perceive your own gender. of that story that we've been told from society, that this is masculine man will talk about his penis or whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
But is that actually serving you, I think, is the question. Like, is that actually what you want to be telling the world and showing the world? Is it resonating with you? Or is it just something you've been told that you're playing out because you feel like you should play out that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and this is why, for me, this is just largely about about freedom.
Mm.
And it's not necessarily about, like, politics. I mean, it gets very political because any minority that is, you know, attempting to become more free and, you know, then it becomes political. But at its essence, it's about freedom and it's about healing, because every single person is impacted by the gender binary.
Mm.
And the understanding that it's just trans or non-binary people that are impacted is an illusion. Because how, you know, especially for women, how much effort do women put in towards being the perfect type of woman, wearing certain clothes? Oh, I hate my body because women are supposed to be thin and tanned, you know, plastic surgery,
mm.
All types of plastic surgery are gender affirming surgery,
wow.
Whether you're trans or not. If a cis woman, so a woman who identifies as female, her biological sex is female, gets lip injections,
mm.
because she believes that the pinnacle of womanhood, or for her to feel more womanly, women have bigger lips, that's gender affirming surgery. And so everyone, it's to some degree, has this kind of stress or pressure to fit into the mold of their gender.
Mm.
So I think that with, you know, the currents of freedom that trans and non-binary people express are medicine for everyone. And mm. Alok, who we were talking about before, they talk about it so much that, like, the reason why people are transphobic or express hatred towards trans and non-binary people and queer people in general is because they haven't given themselves that permission to be that free. Mm. And so seeing someone else being super free is triggering, because it's like, what the fuck? Like, here I am, like, I have to be a strong man. I'm not allowed to express my emotions. I'm not allowed to express femininity. And maybe as a little boy, I mm. liked the color pink and I liked being soft. But now I've changed who I am because of this pressure. So how the fuck are you? Why are you allowed to be a man wearing a dress? You know? So it's like, it becomes political because we have so many people being triggered by the existence of queer people. Mm. And it becomes political because queer people deserve to be safe oh, to 100%. Exist, safe to get married. So it's interesting how it actually is about freedom, but it becomes so politicized because there are the majority of people haven't done their own healing to then be okay with queer people existing.
So much truth in what you've just said. I love it. And not to limit this down to a very basic concept, because it's not, but I guess from what you've said, it makes me think, are we all just prescribing to these gender binaries in order to be loved? Like the woman getting her lips done or her boobs done, you know, you're doing that because you're hoping that the opposite sex will find you more attractive and that you will be more loved.
Yep.
And that's why we put our bodies under the knife. So are we all just prescribing to this stuff, one, to get love, but two, to also not feel shamed?
Mm. Yeah. And it's really interesting, this how much of the gender identity is based around being perceived as beautiful by the opposite sex, right? And once I started really unpacking my identity as a lesbian or as gay, and really just realized that actually it's not, like, I'm done with romantically or sexually relating with men.
Mm.
And so once I let that part of me die, then I was like, wait, then what's my gender? Because so much of my gender was based around being perceived as attractive, beautiful, worthy by men. So once that died, then I was like, oh, there's not much of my womanly gender left.
Yeah. And it makes sense as to why people resonate so much with that if that's what they're looking for. And then you've decided to let it go because it's not serving you anymore. And you're like, wow, this whole identity doesn't resonate with me anymore. Wow.
Yeah. That and makes that's so much sense. It's honestly scary because I really knew myself as a woman. And in my head, I was always like, oh, I'm just revolutionizing what woman means. So I'm allowed to have hairy legs and I'm allowed to blah, 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 blah. But then when I let the, like, my woman identity die and she's still in the process of dying, it's really intense. And I think that this is the part that is not often seen or spoken about. I know that like, you know, everyone loves drag queens. And yeah, something else that Alok says is like, people love the queer community when we're entertaining them. People don't want to like just like listen to us speak. And there is so much healing that queer people need. And I don't feel like there's many spaces available for genuine queer healing to occur because, you know, even like every time someone asks me what my pronouns are and I say, oh, they, them, like I feel guilty, like, oh, you know, or like I'm observing, like, am I actually safe to say this out loud? Like, am I saying it to someone who's going to be like, oh, cool, and like get it? Or someone that's going to be like, oh, like you're one of those, or like, oh, whatever. Or just ignore it and keep calling me she, her, and you know, so it's like,
yeah,
you know, walking through the world like this where I'm trying to be free, but then I'm also like terrified at the same time.
It's that constant assault on your identity. Like you're not free to be safe because you don't know how people will react. And that's a terrifying world to live in.
Yeah. And I don't know. I don't know how genuine it is either. Like, I don't know. Like it's in my head, it's kind of like guilty until proven innocent, in the sense that like everyone in my head, everyone is not okay with it until they prove that they're okay with it, which creates a lot of anxiety and nervousness in my body. And for example, like in my Instagram bio, I was like, okay, I was she, they, and then I went to they, them. And then that felt really scary. So I put they, she, and the she was there as like a safety measure, safety measure so that people wouldn't feel bad for using she, her pronouns. And so that, you know, if I made a new friend in person and they followed me online, that they would still like me because she was in there instead of it just being they, them. But there's like this whole inner dialogue happening with me and this whole strategy around how I express myself so that I'm still liked.
Yeah.
Because that has always been really important to me, how I'm perceived, and that I'm perceived as like a good human being.
How can we, as someone, like I would call myself an ally, I don't know if that's even relevant but or the right terminology, but how can we build a safe space for you to feel comfortable to express who you are? Because I love trans people, I love anyone who's expressing themselves as their true self. I think that's fantastic and courageous and commendable. But I do have a bit of anxiety around what if I say the wrong thing and what if I upset them, which it's not about me, but it's like, how can I build a safe space for you guys to feel free to be able to here's my offering of friendship and not feel terrified of like, what if I reject you?
This is an amazing question. And there's multiple parts to this. Okay. The first thing that I want to address and like what I want to normalize is kind of making it lighthearted and fun, because I even still sometimes I stuff up other people's pronouns when they're non-binary and they use they them pronouns, because it is this like automated language thing that just happens. It just spills out. Even sometimes I refer to my own body as like she, and I'm like, wait, am I even allowed to say that about myself? And so it's like a learning thing. And so if someone uses the wrong pronouns for me, what feels the worst for me is if it's just said and it's not corrected and they know it, then I'm kind of like, then I go, because my somatic response is like, feels like shrinking, And then when nothing's said, then it's like, oh, it doesn't matter that I'm shrinking. But if someone's like, oh yeah, Jamie Lee Sheep, I mean, they, blah, 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 just continue the conversation, like do it in a lighthearted, fun way. Or, you know, if someone's like, hey, ladies, and like, I'm in that group, and then they go, I mean, honeys, I'm like, yeah, like, why can't we just say, okay, language is this fun thing that we get to play with, and let's just like make it fun and exciting. Because if it's like, oh, she, I mean, fuck, they, sorry, it's like, let's just like keep it light and fun and vibrant. So there's that part of it, and I also want to hold that frequency of like, let's keep this light.
Yeah.
And I think as an ally, the other thing that you can do is like queerness is like a codex, right? And if you're not going to like receive that codex through your own like personal lived experience, through your own identity, then I invite you to like watch queer TV shows, absorb queer media, follow queer people on social media so that you are still getting that. Because like we've all been so brainwashed to only see heterosexual people. And so we actually do have to go out of our way to receive queer media. And we're very lucky that there's so many queer TV shows and stuff coming out right now. But yeah, because then you can like absorb the lingo, and then by absorbing that media, it then becomes normalized in you, and you can receive that codex even though you don't identify as queer. So yeah, I feel like those are two really important things to consider when relating to queer people and non-binary people.
Yeah, I love that. Thank you so much. That's been helpful, and I will take that on board. One of my big questions is like, what was the turning point for you going, no, this needs to change?
It's really interesting that I'm actually coughing a lot right now, because it's like forcing me to communicate things that I don't get invited to talk about much. So I'm just noticing in my body that I'm like there's a lot of clearing happening in my throat. It's very medicinal. So yeah, the turning point. Well, I was actually at an intensive training for my certificate in somatic sex education, and someone else who was also in that training was my friend, who is also non-binary, and at that time I was like she, her pronouns, like just woman. And we were in a group setting, and they used they them pronouns for me in front of me, talking to somebody else about me. I was like, whoa. I just like noticed how that made me feel. I was super surprised that I even like clocked it, or that it even made me feel something, but it just did. And I was like, oh. And because like they are non-binary, they use they them pronouns, the fact that they use the same pronouns for me that they do for themselves, they're like super queer as well, that made me feel so seen. And I was like, oh, you think I'm like you, like you see that in me?
Yeah.
And my whole life I've not had anyone see my queerness in me. I've like proved myself and be like, hey guys, I'm queer, instead of someone being like, hey babe, like you're super queer. You know, I've had to figure it out myself. So in this moment of just being fully seen, like, oh, like you think I'm as queer as you? Fucking deadly. That's sick.
Yeah.
And so then that started, like that really planted that seed. And then just like little moments happening over time. Yet it was really my best friend, Naomi, who is also super queer. Yeah, they said to me, like, do you want me to just start using they, them pronouns for you so you can just see how it feels? And I was like, oh, okay. So then Naomi started using they, them pronouns for me. And I went through phases of being like, oh my God, it's super weird, but I like it. And they'd be like, oh, I hate it. Like I hate pronouns in general. What the fuck? And then what I started to notice was gendered language.
Yeah.
Like I went out to a restaurant with a bunch of my friends who were all female bodied, and the waiter comes, hey ladies, how's it going? You know, he's trying to play this cool role, ladies this. And then I'm just like, whoa, okay. Like gender is now super relevant to this interaction. And then it was just like hearing gendered language for the first time ever, how everything is like girl, lady, she, her, this, that. And I was like, whoa, this is really intense. So I knew that a part of me was dying and that there was something that I was becoming. And I shaved my head to symbolize that. And that was huge because my hair was long and orange and curly, and was also like, I got complimented on my hair a lot. So it was also like this part of me that I knew made me beautiful, that other people loved. And yeah, and honestly, this like need to shave my head and like this rapid like death rebirth happened so quickly that I couldn't even catch my breath. Like 1 minute I was a woman with long orange hair, and then the next minute I was a non-binary baldy.
I love that so much. That's such a beautiful story with your best friend. I think there's just something so intimate when people see you for who you truly are. Like, we have so much roles on top of us, like walls up of like who we're pretending to be, that we put so much energy into. And then for someone to break through that and go, I fully see you, like that's the most intimate act you could possibly think of. And potentially, in my mind, romantic. Like, I would love that. Like,
yeah,
it would feel like connection to me.
And that's the type of love that queer people have for each other.
And
it's a different type of love that only queer people get, because there is like this knowing that, okay, we've been on this same journey where the world has expected us to be a type of person, and we've been in deep listening to ourselves, and we've carved out our own reality where we are safe to exist and be ourselves.
Yeah.
And then queer people, they're just like, same, like fucking love you, same, all about it. And there is a type of like calm that that brings to my nervous system that I can't get from anything else. And similarly, when I'm around people who aren't queer, there's a tension in my nervous system. And I'm actually not around queer people that often. I'm not a part of a queer community. So it's interesting that so much of my queer identity is here, and I have certain particular friends that like have the queer codex, they're all about it, but honestly mostly it's like the queer community online that, you know, supporting me. So I still feel like I've got a long way to go, because like I want to be a part of more queer communities, but I'm also like don't really party that much. So a lot of queer community is like partying, and I, you know, as a projector, also need to be invited into spaces. So I'm just like, kind of lonely in it at the moment.
It feels like unconditional love, because it feels like it's like no matter who I present to you as, you're going to love me regardless. Whereas if you think about your non-queer friends, it's like, or even random people on the street, like you don't know if they're going to reject you or have their own opinion around that, which feels like conditional love, like you'll love me under certain conditions.
Yeah, that's why I feel like queerness is godliness, because like, you know, connecting to the frequency of God and like the true messages of Christianity, of Jesus, without all the fucking bullshit, is like love thy neighbor, love thy motherfucking neighbor, even if your neighbor is a black trans woman, love thy neighbor.
You know?
And so it's crazy that there isn't that automated love. But yeah, queer people are just like, I'll fucking love you no matter how you express yourself, because each individual expression of queerness is a unique expression of God, which deserves love. And that's why like in the queer community, there's a new family dynamic, because it's really common, especially for trans folk, that they are kicked out of their homes, and so they literally have to go and create new families. And so queer, like the queer understanding of family and love is completely different. And yeah, I'm really in awe of that.
I guess that's why I connect so much with being an ally. It's like people are people regardless of who they are, and they deserve love regardless. Like, I will love anyone, you know. Tell me more about what is the queer definition of family? I'd love to know more.
Well, I don't know.
Could
It's
be
the thing.
anyone.
I don't really know because, again, it's like something that I've witnessed and perceived through media, but it's not part of my learnt experience. But what I do feel is important is like respect and respecting that, like our queer elders, like queer people who are older, firstly have survived tougher stuff because they've had to exist as a queer person in the 70s, in the 80s, you know, when it was more oppressive, right? That we understand that older queer people are fucking wise and powerful and deserve to be listened to. And this also reminds me of how many Indigenous peoples and peoples of Black and Brown descent have and consider third, fourth, fifth genders. And I've had conversations with different Indigenous people from different Indigenous heritages who have said, "Oh, like someone who's, you know, a man and a woman or a third gender or whatever, they have a higher spiritual power. And if they bless you, it's super powerful, but you wouldn't want to do wrong by them because if they curse you, you know, they just then it would be really bad." So they're understood as more magical because they understand the realms of the feminine and the realms of the masculine, and they have a very unique relationship to God and to Creator. And that's why for me, if I'm around a queer person who's older than me, I respect them so much because I do perceive them as this really powerful being, because of everything that they've been through. And I guess when we consider like queer family dynamics, that respect is a core foundation. And also younger queers who are trying to navigate who are we have to learn from older queer people. And for me, I only have one elderly queer person in my life that I know, which I'm very blessed to have that connection. But aside from that, it's only through media that I'm feeling connected to queer people who are older than me, which I have grief for because I'd love to have an in-person community for that.
Definitely. Like, I've never even heard the term like queer elder. Like, that was a revelation itself. And I'm like, why haven't I ever even thought about this before? But it makes so much sense when you compare it to Indigenous populations of like their elders, and we go to them for advice and, you know, the wisdom they can share to the younger generation. And I think you bang on with the idea of being more spiritually aligned. When you are gender fluid, it really resonates with me. It's like, you know what? Here are all of us in the gender binary trying to find love and desperate to find the love that we're looking for. But here's the people who've broken out of that matrix and decided, you know what? I love myself enough to sit here in my true expression, regardless of how the world perceives me. That's powerful.
And it's so complex and continuous because again we have like, you know, like RuPaul's Drag Race, which I love, and there's so many parts of it I love seeing people express themselves. But then it's also through the lens that like queer people have to be like entertainers or really good at something, which is interesting because there's also like a lot of female-bodied non-binary people or trans men who are not necessarily entertaining and don't resonate with putting on lots of makeup and being super expressive. So we have like queer people who heterosexual people love, and they're like, because they're being entertained by them. But then you also have this whole other section, which is probably the majority of queer people that are like quiet and still odd, you know, and you know, like people who are female bodied but have facial hair and that are considered freaky by other people, and they are quiet and they don't want to entertain straight people. And so there's this whole like spectrum, and you know, even I can fall into that trap of like, yes, I'm fucking queer, like I have to be loud and expressive about it so that it's like this cool trending thing. But it's like, okay, there's actually still so much work that we can do to make all queer people feel safe, and for me that feels like through exposure. Like we just have to keep seeing female bodied people with facial hair,
and
have to keep seeing you know, trans women who have more masculine features, you know, like especially for trans women, the pressure on them to look and fit into the woman gender. So, you know, still the gender pressure is so intense, but, you know, why can't we have trans women who have broad shoulders, who still have a big Adam's apple, who still have a deep voice? So it's really inviting the collective psyche to push their perception on what is gender. And there's a lot of things that need to break, but yeah.
Why can't we accept all people? Why do they have to be in our little box for us to give them any semblance of acceptance?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a huge question for the collective to ponder.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And what would it feel like if we were just compassionate?
Yeah. And to reach into that part of ourselves that goes, I know how pressured I am to live up to my gender expectations, whether that be for me, something like having children, or whether that be for my partner never crying. And to sit with that emotion and go, you know, I should be allowed to choose whatever is right for me and my body, and if children is not part of that plan, I shouldn't be judged for that.
Yeah.
And sit with that emotion and then transpose that empathy onto someone going through a transition or whatever it is, and love them as much as I feel I would love to be loved in that situation.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And that's compassion, and that's saying, how can I empathize for what this other person is going through? Because the truth is that we're not different. Mm. We're not that different at all. And our pain is similar, and we have different ways of expressing it. But each person surely comes to a point in their lives where they question who they are, and they make a decision to be themselves despite what their parents want them to be or what society wants them to be. We each have that. Perhaps trans people have the most intense version of that, which is where we can all look at trans people and be like, whoa, mad respect. And yes, you know stuff that we don't. And, you know, looking to trans people for guidance and letting them inspire us in multiple ways, because if we were all as courageous as a trans person, it would be amazing.
It would be a whole different world.
A whole different world.
Now, I really want to ask you about your somatic sex healing training.
Mm-hmm.
But do you feel like you're complete with everything we've spoken about, with where you're at with your identity and things like that?
Yeah, well, it actually weaves into each other, because sexological bodywork, which is what I'm trained in, was actually created in the 80s in America during the AIDS crisis.
Mm.
So this is a time where a lot of gay men had AIDS, and the funding wasn't there, and they weren't sure how it was being transmitted to each other, but there was like a lot of people in the queer community dying, and it was very intense. And so sexological bodywork initially birthed as a way to support gay men to relate to each other erotically and to receive pleasure without there being any genital touch or penetration. So, you know, actually the body of work that I do is about queer resilience, because queerness theoretically is all about looking outside the box and be like, okay, there's this one thing, but let's expand our awareness and see what else is out there. So this modality is all about being in deep listening to the subtle realms of the body to learn about our sexuality. And it is, honestly, it's queer witchcraft. They don't tell you that when they're teaching it to you. But for me doing the training, I realized that there is an inherent magic and inherent queerness in working with the body as a felt entity, instead of it being about any type of story. And I find the sex education that we receive in like schools is very like basic and super gendered and super hetero, like, oh, not even telling us that our genitals are actually called a vulva and that we have all these other parts. It's like, you have a vagina where the penis goes and that's where you become pregnant. We have that realm of sex education, but then this embodied sex education is inherently queer because it's nothing to do with the story and everything to do with what the individual person feels and what they notice in their body, what their heart is feeling, how they want to be touched. And yeah, for me, that feels inherently queer because it's also breaking the sexual scripts that heterosexual people fall into, which is like foreplay, maybe we lick each other's genitals and then we penetrate and then we come and that's the end of it. But sexological bodywork and somatic sex education actually invites people to be present with their breath and to just, you know, use eroticism and arousal as this play thing that allows us to get to different states of awareness and consciousness. And it has nothing to do with gender or gender roles, which is beautiful.
I love that so much. That sounds fantastic. Do you think that everything you've been through personally in your lead up to this has led you to this moment to be able to teach that?
Yeah, it was really interesting. In one of my most recent bleeds, I was, really being in deep listening to my ancestors, and my Indian ancestors came through really strong. And then I was feeling into like Indian philosophy and ancient Indian perspectives on Kama Sutra and Tantra. And then I felt like, whoa, actually my Indian ancestors have been helping me through gifting me lived experiences about sexuality to support me in understanding Tantra and understanding Kama Sutra without having like read it in a book or studied it. I've actually learned it through my lived experiences. And yeah, it's always like my personal sexuality has always been talking to me. Like there must be more, like, you know, this thing, there's got to be more. For example, the first time that I masturbated and brought myself to orgasm, I was actually in bed with my boyfriend at the time. And at that time in my life, I had a really low libido and he had fallen asleep and I actually felt like aroused. I was like, oh, like I'm feeling something. So I just like started touching myself. And while I was touching myself, like these just like flashing images of like women's bodies was just like overflowing my brain. And I brought myself to orgasm for the first time in my life. Then I was like, whoa, it was like my body's way of being like, hey, remember who you are.
Yeah.
And so then that initiated me being like, okay, through eroticism, there's like this thread between my erotic and my true self. And that just wanted to like emerge.
Oh, so many questions. Thank you for sharing that. That was wonderful. So do you feel like there's definitely a link between, I guess, a low libido and not being your true self?
That is an amazing question. And I think yes. Because at the time I was having very scripted heterosexual sex. It would get to a point where my boyfriend would go to initiate intimacy and I would just feel so anxious because I knew that it was going to be, oh, his hand on my lap, sex begins, he puts his dick in, he ejaculates, and I am just dealing with it. Acknowledging that, yes, sometimes we had beautiful lovemaking that was intensely pleasurable for me, and there was a time in the relationship where I got my libido back, but actually it was after I had started doing plant medicine ceremonies and after I'd come back from Peru that I did get my libido back. So that version before me was holding on to more trauma, was actually not feeling safe. Because when you don't feel safe in your body, there's tension. And so there's not going to be pleasure, because pleasure can only come from a relaxed nervous system. So yeah, my low libido was like from anxiety and just like, nah, I'm not safe to even engage in this because you can't hold me in sex.
That resonates so much with the last episode I just put out on painful sex, mm-hmm. that the feeling of not feeling safe, if that's the pervasive thing, then it's really hard to feel pleasure.
Yeah. So and
so interesting.
Yeah. And that's what like all of my clients actually see me for. They don't realize it. But someone can come to me like, oh, they have vaginismus, that you have painful sex, all these different things, or they like can't orgasm, whatever it is. But it just comes back to not feeling safe in the body. That is the foundational point there. That's the foundations. So yeah, when people come to me, you know, it's not like, all right, let's get you having orgasms again. It's like, okay, where is there safety? And it's a very delicate, sensitive space to hold someone in that, in their journey to finding safety in their body again. And I love to offer that to people and to provide loving touch. And whenever I'm working with a client, every single time I touch them, I only touch them when I've been asked to. So the whole process is about their agency, and getting them to feel, okay, feel into your heart. And where does your heart want me to touch you right now? Oh, my heart wants me to touch you, to touch me on my face. How would you like me to touch your face? Can you please stroke it lightly? Of course. And then I'm doing that. And how does that feel? Oh, that feels really good. That feels beautiful. And then it's like quite simple what we're doing, but because this type of tenderness and deep listening doesn't happen, people are just out there in the world just fucking touching each other and not thinking about it. So when we bring this like simple but tentative deep listening and like, okay, and how does this touch make you feel? Oh, wow, like I feel safe. Great. So we're creating new neural pathways of safety in the body.
It's almost sad that that's not our starting point. Like I wish we lived in a world where, you know, sex education was up to scratch, where feeling safe and consent was the standard. Unfortunately, we don't, but maybe one day when our generation grows up, we will live there. Mm-hmm. But I find that so beautiful that you're bringing people back to the basics and that you're bringing them back. Okay, this is where we start from, and then we can kind of grow from there. And I've had a huge realization just listening to you talk. I felt like a lot of shame and a lot of pressure around sex, and it was very stressful for me when I was going through that period of painful sex, because I felt like, how am I ever going to have, you know, a heteronormative relationship? Like, it's not going to work. And it was the pressure of being a woman and what the expectations of being a woman in a relationship is. That was the painful part, was like, I can't live up to this expectation. And I feel shame around that. And I feel like no one will ever love me for that. So that's really interesting. Yeah.
Yes. Yes. And yeah, seeing how the intensity of the gender binary shows up in sex and intimacy is a lot of pressure. And I feel there's this part of the male psyche where the pressure is on the woman to have an orgasm, which can feel revolutionary. Oh, finally, it's about us women and us having orgasms. But it also creates this pressure that women have to be like always feeling good in sex and having orgasms and just like being fully into it. And then it also creates this thing in the male psyche of like, oh my God, I'm failing and this and that. Mm. Whereas the reality is that when we engage in intimacy, we're in that deep embodiment, which we aren't usually in other parts of our lives. That's when the body talks and the body say, no, 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 you're not just having an orgasm because you haven't been listening to me. And what I'm trying to tell you is I haven't processed this. I'm holding onto this trauma and I don't feel safe.
Mm.
And then it's like, oh, but I'm supposed to be having a really good time. I'm supposed to be feeling hot and sexy. So now what? And then if you're in a heterosexual relationship, the male-bodied person is like, oh, I just want to make you feel good. I don't have the skill set to support you in whatever you're going through. And then it's just like, okay, we're two uneducated people, not sure what's going on, but we know that sex is supposed to look and feel good.
Mm.
And we're both consenting to this, so what's actually happening?
Yeah. I resonate with that so much. I think there's just so much vulnerability when it comes to the bedroom that you never see anywhere else in a person. Like, they have their walls up 90% of the time, but in a bedroom you can't have your walls up.
Mm-mm.
Or your body puts your walls up for you because it's scared of other things that it hasn't processed and it hasn't worked through, even though this might be a safe situation. Mm-hmm. Or even probably more so when it is a safe sexual situation, that's when that shit comes up because you're like, I trust this person, you know.
Yeah. And yeah, be interesting, like for people who like have casual sex, there can definitely be certain people that have casual sex and there's like conversations and consent and it's amazing and vibrant and perfect. But for people that have casual sex and in that sexual interaction, it's not safe to have the process. Perhaps they have the process afterwards. And I know that people can experience having sex and then a couple of days later being like, oh my God. And like all these things come up and it's like eroticism is a fucking magical portal that we need to be intentional with.
Yeah.
Because sex without intention can be very chaotic.
Yeah. The triggers are going to come up for sure, whether that be in the moment or later on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think for heterosexual couples as well, I invite heterosexual people to have queer intimacy. And like what I imagine that looking like is, okay, like a male-bodied person has an anus. And so the female-bodied person can play the role of the giver and giving pleasure to the man, to his anus. And when male-bodied people get the chance to experience internal intimacy, there's this deep understanding that occurs because they know what it's like for someone to enter inside of them. And then when they then enter a woman, they will have this deeper understanding of what that feels like. And so even in heterosexual dynamics, there's so much space for queerness to exist, which can be scary for a lot of heterosexual people, especially male people.
Yeah, definitely. And just the idea of like giving and receiving and being on the receiving end of like, what does that feel like? And, you know, how important is consent in this situation kind of thing, even though it's always important. But yeah, I think that's a really great point. It's interesting, yeah, to be able to explore that within any relationship, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I pray often that heterosexual men find their way to receiving pleasure in their anus because, yeah, I think that that would change so much. Like us living in a patriarchy, and like that saying, like, oh my God, he's such a tight ass. Like literally, literally, so many men are walking around with tight pelvic floors. Like they even they're men like aren't allowed to walk with like a swing in their hips so that their hips are locked, there's tension in their anus, all, you know. And even I remember in high school, like the boys would like shove pens up each other's bums and there's like all this like violation on the teenage anus, and so it is so fucking difficult for grown men to surrender and soften to the anus. And because the anus, you've got your external sphincter and your internal sphincter, right? Your internal sphincter is controlled by your autonomic nervous system. So it's like your gateway to subconscious. It will only soften if you're actually feeling relaxed and calm. And so there is this deep listening conversation that happens when there is touch happening with the anus, which is why it's confronting, which is why a lot of people are like, no, I don't want to do it. But beyond that, beyond the edge, is like this beautiful surrendering and learning an actual full nervous system relaxation. It unwinds the tension of the pelvis. It unwinds the tension of the spine, of the inner organs, full body nervous system relaxation. So like literally like heterosexual men, or all men, all male-bodied people receiving pleasure in their anus is so important. And the rates of prostate cancer are high. So we have so many male-bodied people like with that trauma in that area, then getting cancer and dying. So,
wow, I never made that connection. I'd love to ask, I heard the other day, and you've touched on it a few times and it makes so much sense to me, but I'd love to hear your opinion on it, that the ability to orgasm is directly related to surrendering and trust.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting because there is the physiological responses that can happen sometimes in any state. Like there's multiple occasions where people have even been like sexually assaulted or engaging in non-consensual sex and have had an orgasm because there are sometimes ways for the body to respond. But then there's different types of orgasms, especially for vulva owners, you know, the capacity to have orgasm from internal penetration and touch, or the capacity to ejaculate and squirt, requires a very different atmosphere than to clitoral stimulation. And clitoral orgasm is typically the most easiest for people to get to, very similar to like a penis in that way, right? Then that internal, there does need to be that softening and that trust, because if there's tension in the pelvis, there's not going to be pleasure. And when I teach people about female ejaculation as well, especially female ejaculation, which comes out through the urethra, can sometimes feel like urinating. And so there also needs to be that level of safety that, like it feels like I'm peeing, so I need to feel safe enough to surrender to that feeling as well. And if you can't trust the person that you're with, like you can't trust that they're going to hold you through that process.
Immediate muscle tension. Yep.
That tension's going to be there and it'll be like, nah, holding. But that's also why we see a lot of people having intoxicated sexual relations. And that's really cool, especially alcohol, because alcohol is a depressant. So it actually softens the nervous system and makes everything all soft. And so you don't actually have to consciously be like, oh, I trust this person. You can just forcibly put your body in that state.
Yeah. Wow, we've had some amazing conversations.
Many realms, traversed many realms.
I love it. Is there anything else you feel like you need to share?
Yeah, I'll talk a bit about like my business and my offering. So I've created a movement or a way of being or a school or whatever you want to call it, but it's called School of Erotic Alchemy. And erotic alchemy is essentially what I do, is connecting to sexuality, to eroticism, as a modality of healing, as a way to feel more connected to ourselves and really bring ourselves online and bring aliveness into our lives. So yeah, with School of Erotic Alchemy, I do one-on-one sessions, personalized sex education, coaching, sexological body work, genital massage and mapping. I work with vulva owners predominantly. Maybe one day I will work with penis owners, but it's a personal edge that I'm not ready to meet. And I feel like the magic coming through me is tailored to vulva owners at the moment. And I do also work with couples as well, of any gender and genital configuration. And the couples work is actually supporting couples to learn about each other's anatomy through the skills of Tantra and what we're talking about before, like that embodied agency and that presence, are actually teaching to do it to each other. Because when I'm just seeing one of them, there's only so much I can do, because then still their partner doesn't have that understanding of how it all works. And I really want to expand my work to be with more queer people, because I have an understanding of the queer codex, and I would love to really support queer people, gender non-conforming people, and trans people as well, because non-binary and trans people's relationship to their bodies is very, very different from a cis person. And so how can non-binary and trans people still feel safe and receive pleasure in their bodies and still be sexual beings despite having gender dysphoria or not relating to certain parts of their body? So I'd love to support more of the queer community in that. And I also want to start running queer grief rituals to really support queer people in like letting that old part of them die that's not the son that their parents wanted them to be, or that's not, you know, just gonna have a heterosexual relationship or whatever that version of ourselves is that is the societal story, a space where that can really die and that we can grieve that and then call in who we actually are. But if there's queer people without ritual and without healing, that's chaos. And so to bring more intentional healing and ritual to the queer community is a huge vision of mine. So yeah, if anyone that's like listening that is queer and wants to be a part of this, I suggest for them to reach out to me. But if not, if you're not a queer person and you just want to receive sex education, I'm super open and available to that as well.
I love that so much. Such important work that you do. Like, thank you so much for doing this work. It's so needed. So needed. And you're going to help so many people. I can just feel it.
Yeah, I feel it too. It's very exciting.
I love it. Your energy is just amazing. Thank you so much, Jamie Lee. It's been an honor to have you.
Thank you so much for having me. It's, yeah, this conversation has been really healing for me as well, and I'm excited to see the ripple effect of this conversation.
Yes, me too, me too.